From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Welcome to Soundings from the National Humanities Center. This week on Soundings, part two in a series of programs about music history and the preservation of musical instruments at the Smithsonian Institution. My guest is James Weaver, Director of Performance Programs and Curator of Restored Musical Instruments at the National Museum of American History at the Smithsonian Institution. Among the selections you'll hear on Soundings this week are pieces by the 18th century English composer John Stafford Smith, the 19th century American composer Louis Moreau Gottschalk, Anton Dvorak, and George Frederick Handel. Jim Weaver, you come to the Humanities Center from the Smithsonian Institution. You work at the National Museum of American History. You're Director of Performance Programs and Curator of Restored Instruments. Let's begin this portion of our conversation. We're going to move, we were talking last week about the 18th century. I take it moving into the early part of the 19th century. Let's begin with something that's rather contemporary. We have an example here of ballroom dance music. We're going to listen to it, and then I want to ask you some questions about performance. What are we about to hear?
Well, what I want to play, in fact, may astound you and your listeners. It's not what we'd normally think of as ballroom dance music, but it's an early version of the Star Spangled Banner when it was first being used in a straight waltz tempo.
All right.
Long before it became the kind of patriotic piece that we now think of it, it was a little more easygoing, a little more friendly version. Mm-hmm. And this comes out of a collection of instruments which are possible to put together to put make a whole Civil War period marching band, for instance. So mm-hmm. we have a lot of wonderful 19th century brass instruments. The program out of which this particular recording evolves was mid-19th century ballroom dance, and but somehow I think it might be kind of fun to play this particular version of a piece that virtually everyone knows in this country but has a rather little twist to it.
All right, let's listen. Jim Weaver, we're talking about music performance, restoration, conservation. You come to the Humanities Center from the Smithsonian Institution. We've just listened to a strange, peculiar version here of the Star-Spangled Banner performed as ballroom dance music. Tell me about the performance here. What is unusual? What have we just heard?
Well, the obvious thing is the kind of lighthearted tempo of this piece, which puts it in a real waltz time, and of course the cornetist there at the end playing a little cadenza, which we would not normally hear at any football game performance of this piece or presidential inaugural ceremony.
And this is the way it would have been enjoyed, absorbed by audiences in the middle of the 19th century, is that right?
That's true, and of course the piece in fact comes as a tune out of an 18th century English drinking tune, so it just took a while before it became codified as the sort of mm-hmm. important piece that we now feel that it is mm-hmm. for our country.
Jim, we're talking about music performance and conservation and restoration. You come to the Humanities Center from the National Museum of American History. Now we're going to get a little more serious, I take it. We're going to listen to a selection by a performer. Help me with this. A performer, a composer whose name is Gottschalk.
That's right.
The middle of the 19th century. You told me before our taping session that here is the first example of an American musician who becomes what? The international rage.
He became quite a rage and did a lot of touring, and his career in some ways was very tied to instrument manufacture in this country. What we have on this particular recording is a Chickering concert grand from 1865. Jonas Chickering in Boston invented the first patented iron frame, which made it possible to turn the piano into the modern, brilliant concert grand of our day.
Yeah, now that's a very important transitional moment, is it not?
That's true, and Chickering went off to Europe to expositions and mm-hmm. won all kinds of prizes, and in many ways turned the direction of piano manufacture around.
Now, before that, the frames were entirely out of wood.
That's right.
And what an obvious question here. What difference did that make?
Well, the whole business of stability was a major thing, and that is that wood reflects variance in temperature and humidity. And in order to make something that was really strong enough to bear the literal tons of pressure that modern stringing brings to a grand piano, the wood had to be laid out, you know, with framing that was like building mm-hmm. a fortress. So the iron frame made it possible to build, in some ways, a rather lighter instrument, but one that would withstand this kind of mm-hmm. pressure. But in the main, and of course we have these examples of Beethoven, who presumably just broke strings right and left. Well, of course, the strings would only break if they're of a material that is easily breakable, and they had to remain that way to a degree before the framing was strong enough to really withstand the mm-hmm. tension of stronger materials.
Jim Weaver, what are we going to listen to here? Help me with the pronunciation of the composer's name. Gottschalk?
That's right. Louis Moreau Gottschalk. He was a composer from New Orleans. This is a piece played on a Chickering Grand of 1865, and the performer is Lambert Orcus.
Thank you.
What you've just heard is a piece called Manchiga by Louis Moreau Gottschalk, an American composer of the mid-19th century, played on a Chickering grand at the Smithsonian Collection, dating from 1865, by pianist Lambert Orcus.
Now, how do you know, Jim Weaver, that this is what a mid-19th century American audience would have heard? That obviously was part of your aim in restoring this, the instrument, and in performing the music.
As it happens, 1865, the date of this particular piano, is rather near at hand, and there's not been all that much that has happened in evolution of the instrument since that time.
This comes after the point when the iron, when the steel frames are being used.
That's right.
That's a big...
The business of iron framing members started in the first quarter of the 19th century with the Industrial Revolution. Chickering patented a frame which could be widely used, and that's when the piano began taking on a certain kind of sound. What we have done, it is based in some ways on our experience with earlier instruments, but to set this up ideally, as well as we're able, to produce the best range of sounds that are capable from the instrument. As it happens, this has a very brilliant, high decibel level, this particular instrument, and when it was put back to playing condition, it was a source of wonder to us all.
Jim Weaver, just spend a moment or two. Tell me about this man, Gottschalk. He became, you told me, the first 19th century American musical phenomenon.
That's true. As a performer, he must have been a brilliant technician. And I think as a performer in the sort of 19th century style that we think of as exemplified by such people as Franz Liszt, he must have transfixed the ladies, because there's a great deal of sense that he was really quite exciting to hear and to watch in performance. And
so Liberace is nothing new, really.
Absolutely not. And an interesting thing is that he did use a lot of elements of black music in his own composition. And if you remember when we were talking last time, I was talking about the fact that...
The coming together
of
the European...
So he's one of the first performer composers to work in that way. In fact, he's written a couple of pieces called The Banjo, and I wish we had time to play them now, but they're rather longer than this example that we've just heard.
Jim Weaver, you come to the Humanities Center as a visitor from the National Museum of American History. You are the Director of Performance Programs, the Curator of Restored Instruments. We're going to listen now to a selection from Dvorak, turn-of-the-century recording. This is important to you in terms of its performance standards. Tell me what we're going to listen to, who's going to play it, and then after we've played it, you can tell me about the performance.
Fine. We're going to listen now to a movement from the Dvorak Piano Trio in F minor, Opus 65. This is the first movement, and it's played by members of the Smithsonian Chamber Players, Marilyn McDonald, violinist Ken Slowick, cellist, and Lambert Orcus, pianist. Wonderful instruments from the Smithsonian collection, the Guarneri del Gesù violin, Stradivarius cello from 1701, and the so-called Paderewski Steinway of 1892.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jim Weaver, we have just listened to a selection from Dvorak, restored music, as it were, from the Smithsonian in terms of both the instruments and the performance. What is special here?
Well, we're still dealing with an approach to performance conventions that is at some variance to what one normally hears today. Both of the string instruments, which are prime examples of major builders, that is, the violin by Guarnerius and the Stradivarius cello, are strung up with gut strings, which were used internationally until the time of World War I.
Let me be a little morbid. Gut, what specifically, what are you talking about there?
Well, actually, it is not cat gut, which is what is often thought to be, but it is sheep gut, in fact. And the best material for that, for the strings, came from Italy, and the First World War stopped the easy availability of the material.
So these people who built these instruments would be, help me with the word, biomedical in some way or another. They knew a lot about the organics of putting these instruments together.
Well, surely they did. And, of course, we're talking here now about very early instruments as far as the string instruments are concerned, which, little insertion here, you know, the violin is quite interesting because it's so much a part of our life, from a modern symphony orchestra to a barn dance, for that matter. But it is a Renaissance invention, and it's, as far as I know, the only Renaissance invention to make it into our time. It's still in full use.
Isn't that remarkable?
And the best instruments are still thought to be those by the Cremonese masters of the 18th century or late 17th century. And so Guarnerius and Stradivarius instruments are used in modern performances all the time. But here the difference is that we have them set up as they were into this century.
Now, what difference might it make if we listen to this performance from that we've just heard from Dvorak with steel strings?
Well, there would be still more brilliance as far as the sound is concerned. The gut strings tend to be rather prettier, I think, although there is a possibility of squeaking with that material that you don't get so much with metal. And I should mention the piano too, which is an 1892 Steinway. It's a particularly beautiful piano, and it does show that our modern listening standards are based on increasingly large halls and playing to larger and larger audiences. This piano sound is a little bit more rounded than we normally hear.
Jim Weaver, just parenthetically, you come to the Humanities Center as a visitor from the Smithsonian Institution. How many of these instruments would be available for people to just walk through your shop and take a look at? Are they on display now?
We do have instruments on display. Unfortunately, we've never had as much space for display as anyone would like, because we really do have hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of instruments, you know, several hundred keyboard instruments alone, and they take up lots of real estate. What we do try to do is the kind of thing which has led to this musical material that I have available to you now, which is to use as many of these restored instruments in performance as possible, so that it's a good way to share the material to people, in fact, who never even make it to the Smithsonian.
Jim Weaver, we're talking about the restoration, conservation of music, musical instruments. You are the Director of Performance Programs and Curator of Restored Instruments at the National Museum of American History at the Smithsonian. We will conclude with an example. This is rather grandiose, is it not? Tell me what we're going to listen to. Who are the performers? And why is this important to you as you trace the development of musical instruments and musical performances?
Well, of course, if you get onto a good thing, you can't but help wishing to make the most of it. A lot of our performances have been with single instruments, single performers, but we have put together a group of musicians who are, I think, uncommonly capable in doing this sort of thing. And as it happens, we've had some recent experience with large force material, which has produced two recordings of the same piece. We did performances and recording with Baroque instruments of Handel Messiah a few years ago with an orchestra that was roughly the size that Handel himself first used in the first performances he conducted, about 35 players.
35.
However, if you remember, last year, 1985, was the 300th anniversary of Handel's birth, so we then got involved with still a different phenomenon, which was to recreate the 100th anniversary celebration from Westminster Abbey was done is one of the first waves of sort of monster concerts. That is, putting together forces that were far beyond anything that Handel himself had ever used or perhaps envisioned. Uh-huh. So we got together something no longer called the Smithsonian Chamber Players, but the Smithsonian Concerto Grosso. Uh-huh. And with the University of Maryland Chorus and Cathedral Choral Society, did a performance of Messiah at the Washington Cathedral, conducted by Antal Durati. I thought it might be kind of fun to end all of this today with the overture to Messiah, played by the largest band of Baroque instruments ever assembled since the 18th century.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to the concluding segment in a series of programs about the restoration and preservation of musical instruments at the Smithsonian Institution. My guest was James Weaver, Director of Performance Programs and Curator of Restored Musical Instruments at the National Museum of American History of the Smithsonian Institution. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Music at the Smithsonian, send $3 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Next week on Soundings, discussions about contemporary American fiction and nonfiction. My guests will be Gail Godwin, whose latest book is The Finishing School, and Robert Coles, author of The Moral Life of Children and The Political Life of Children. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Listen to Soundings. This is Kim Nielsen at the National Humanities Center, inviting you to join Wayne Pond this week for the concluding program in a sounding series about music at the Smithsonian Institution. James Weaver, curator of restored musical instruments at the Smithsonian, presents and discusses pieces by 18th and 19th century English and American composers, including Antonin Dvorak and George Frederick Handel. Music at the Smithsonian, Part 2, this week on Soundings, from the National Humanities Center on this station.